All right. Welcome on to the second episode of the NBA In-Depth podcast. The plan today is I'm going to go through a ton of trade deadline outlooks for each individual team. We're going to start with the Pacific Division and then eventually move into the Northwest Division. So first up, we've got the Sacramento Kings. They've got the potential to be huge sellers here at the deadline. Recent reporting says they will not be looking to deal De'Aaron Fox and Tyrese Halliburton, though, and will continue to be building around them. This story conveniently came out after the 76ers did not show adequate interest in a Fox for Simmons type of swap. Just a coincidence, surely. It's got to be. The Kings' key trade pieces ahead of the deadline include Buddy Hield and Harrison Barnes, with Barnes garnering interest from pretty much every playoff team ahead of the deadline. Barnes, highly coveted skill set on the wing, great shooter at 6'8", can defend multiple positions competently, and provides an edge with his slashing. He's in the 97th percentile among forwards in shooting fouls drawn. Not even 30 years old yet either, by the way, so it's not even like teams would be trading for an aging vet or anything like that. He's probably not worth the Jeremy Grant asking price right now, which is two quality assets, either two first rounders or one first rounder plus a quality young player. If there is a team out there that's going to offer two first rounders for Harrison Barnes, you've got to take that right away. Basically, if you're the Kings, I do not expect many teams to be offering two for Barnes. I would expect more along the lines of a quality first and some decent matching salary in most realistic packages for Harrison Barnes here. We'll use the Miami Heat as our little trade dummy here, as our calibrator. So we can say Harrison Barnes to Miami for a future first rounder, Duncan Robinson and Markieff Morris for salary matching. Getting Robinson would be super redundant for the Kings. They wouldn't do that. Again, this isn't a trade that would have to happen. This is just kind of like the framework that we could expect in a Barnes trade. So Barnes to Miami, Duncan Robinson, Markieff Morris, and Miami's future first-round pick, which wouldn't be until 2028. So that's two quality role players and a first-round pick. That kind of structure is what you could realistically expect in a Harrison Barnes trade if you're a Kings fan. Buddy Hield might be a little tougher to move. He's making almost $23 million to Barnes' $20 million. And that $23 million salary is a pretty consensus negative contract at this point in time. Hield's an awesome shooter off the catch, flying off screens, and even off the dribble. Without a doubt, one of the best shooters in the league. Can't take that away from him. But he gives you absolutely nothing inside the arc and about the same defensively. You could probably trade Hield for a first rounder, but the matching salary you'd get in return wouldn't be positive. It would just be another meh contract. Maybe Boston could potentially show interest here. They've had troubles with knocking down open threes all season, so that would be hugely beneficial for them. Boston owns all of their own first-round picks right now, and Josh Richardson plus Dennis Schroeder would match the salary there, both of which are also on expiring deals, so that's nice for Sacramento. Not sure if that would be something that interests either Boston or Sacramento, but it would probably be a mistake for a team to give up more than a first-round pick in return for Buddy Hield, I would say. As far as guys who the Kings are targeting, they obviously want in on the Ben Simmons action. They were at a time willing to offer Fox, and they were willing to offer a separate package of Buddy Hield, Harrison Barnes, and picks, but the Sixers have already turned down both of those potential packages. The Kings have also been looking at packages that include Marvin Bagley. Good luck with that. He's not worth the $11 million salary right now, and it's not worth trading a pick to get rid of him either. He also won't be worth a raise if that's what he's looking for this offseason in free agency. So unless you packaged him as part of a Harrison Barnes trade, it's going to be really hard to move on from Bagley. But Barnes is presumably going to be headed to a contender, and it's generally a lot harder for those contending teams to cobble together the now $30 million in matching salary required to do that. The Kings have also, surprisingly, quietly made Rashawn Holmes available. I'm really not sure what they're looking for in a return here. The reporting was pretty quiet about it. He's on an extremely team-friendly contract, though. He's on the first year of a four-year $48 million deal at the moment. Maybe for Charlotte, would PJ Washington in a couple seconds move the needle for Sacramento? Would they want a first in there with PJ Washington? Hard to say. Ish Smith or Mason Plumlee would be the salary matcher there. I'd also think that Charlotte would rather just hold out for Miles Turner anyway, so there's probably a below 50% chance that Holmes is moved before the deadline just because they've been so quiet about they want in return for him. I'd say the most likely Kings player to be moved is definitely Harrison Barnes. He's on a great contract, plus his size and skill are very much ideal for any contender. Let's move on now to the ever-polarizing Los Angeles Lakers. They are not looking for future assets or young talent. The Lakers will be looking to package Talen Horton-Tucker, Kendrick Nunn, and a likely 2027 first-round pick for a significant addition to their closing five. If the Lakers also threw in a minimum contract like Kent Bazemore, the Lakers could take back up to $20 million in returning salary, just enough for Jeremy Grant, conveniently, who is definitely one of their top targets, but pretty unrealistic in the grand scheme of things. If I'm Detroit, I don't really care at all for Talen Horton-Tucker. You've already got Cade Cunningham, Sadiq Bey, and you're still trying to develop Killian Hayes in-house, at least a little bit. That 2027 Lakers pick is super interesting, though. LeBron is probably retired by then, and the Lakers could presumably be gearing towards a pretty major rebuild at that point. And based on those post-prime Kobe Bryant years, I've got very little faith in the Lakers to remain competitive once LeBron is gone. Plus, a pick that far out just probably doesn't do it for Detroit, though, as they're surely to have more competitive offers, especially if they kind of drag it out directly to February 10th, the trade deadline. And in that case, the Lakers can likely turn to Harrison Barnes as a secondary offer. Again, Sacramento really doesn't need another guard, but that 27 first and a future second might be closing to a deal if you're Sacramento. Same thing, you'd have to hold out for other offers. The market for Barnes should also be super competitive as we get closer to the deadline. The only other move really available to the Lakers right now, as recently reported by Mark Stein, is a little Russell Westbrook for John Wall 2.0 action here. Houston has been totally fine with benching Wall and eating his salary this season, so it's presumed they would do the same with Westbrook, although I feel like Westbrook would be a lot more open to a buyout to get back out there and play. But the big key to this potential deal is that the Lakers are very desperate to improve their roster while the Rockets simply aren't. So surely in a deal like that, the Lakers would have to add multiple second round picks at least. Now that I'm looking at it here, the Lakers could actually combine a couple packages here with Houston or do them in separate transactions, doesn't really matter. But let's air this out and see how it sounds. The Lakers could go Russell Westbrook, Talen Horton-Tucker, Kendrick Nunn, and that 27 first rounder for John Wall and Eric Gordon. Gordon's up to 45% shooting from three this year and has been pretty natural tertiary ball handler in years prior. Maybe the Lakers are giving up too much here. Maybe Houston's got to send back one of their decent second rounders in that deal as well. Could be interesting though. That was a total audible, by the way. I didn't really think of that Houston framework until I just started recording here. Let me know what you think of that one. Maybe I'm way off. Who knows? That's Westbrook, Horton-Tucker, Nunn, 2027 first round pick to Houston in exchange for John Wall and Eric Gordon. Moving across the street here, let's look at the LA Clippers. It's kind of starting to look like we may not see Paul George or Kawhi Leonard back this year. And if that's the case, we could see the Clippers shift to being pretty significant sellers here at the trade deadline. To me, that would almost certainly start with Serge Ibaka. He can't keep up with smaller players on the perimeter at all anymore. He's fouling more than he ever has since his rookie season, and he's shooting under 30% on those pick-and-pop elbow jumpers, which made him such a weapon in Toronto. The Clippers would almost certainly have to attach at least one second-rounder, probably multiple, to get him off the books, but offloading Ibaka's $9 million salary would save ownership about $40 million on their luxury tax bill, which I'm sure ownership is very aware of. Another deal they could look to make is with Marcus Morris. He is currently owed another $49 million over the next 3 years, by which time he'll be 34 years old. If they can package him and maybe Amir Coffey or Jason Preston for a shorter term deal, I would probably do that if I were the Clippers. They could probably get a first round pick in that deal back for Morris. Then in the summer, they could also use that $5 million taxpayer mid-level exception to go after someone like Otto Porter or Trevor Ariza or even Markieff Morris, somebody of that nature to fill the void of Marcus Morris. And that kind of leaves us with Eric Bledsoe. Yeah. Good luck moving Eric Bledsoe. The Clippers are probably just going to have to eat that $18 million salary for next season. I certainly wouldn't be willing to move Brandon Boston as part of a Bledsoe salary dump. I think he's shown way too much upside as the 51st pick to move on in that kind of trade. And the Clippers just don't really have any assets beyond that, especially if they're using their 2 seconds to get off Ibaka. So yeah, I don't think a Bledsoe deal is realistic here at the deadline. Next up, we're going to take a look at the Phoenix Suns. They certainly have the draft capital to go after someone like Jeremy Grant if they choose. That would make their closing five in theory. Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Mikal Bridges, Jeremy Grant, and DeAndre Ayton. But there's been very little reporting of that kind of aggressive pursuit on the Suns up to this point. Phoenix can offer Detroit multiple first rounders later in the decade, but due to the likely early convey of their picks with OKC, they can use that kind of next available in air quotations language to trade a couple first before 2025 if they choose. Matching salary for this deal would be Cameron Payne and Dario Saric. Detroit would probably also want Jalen Smith as just an additional blue chip sweetener sort of thing. Not sure if either side would be super interested in that. Phoenix seems especially conservative right now, but it's at least an option. If Phoenix is looking to upgrade at that third guard position, though, they could look to acquire Eric Gordon from Houston. Same thing, the outgoing deal for that would be Cameron Payne and Dario Saric, probably a first round pick too, just one first round pick, I would imagine. But again, reporting on the Suns' desire for a trade has been pretty quiet here midway through the season, and understandably so. They've got the league's best record at the time I'm recording this, and they're not necessarily in dire need of an upgrade at really any position right now. In the Pacific Division, this leaves us with the Warriors. This is going to be quick. I'm expecting a very quiet deadline from the Warriors this year. Without a real star like Bradley Beal or Damian Lillard being made available, it's extremely unlikely that the Warriors will want to explore any trades with James Wiseman or Jonathan Kuminga. This ownership group really loves those two and would much rather have them to bridge the gap to an eventual post-Steph era once they get there. The only other move I could see them making is maybe paying another team to take on Nemanja Bjelica's minimum contract. Moving on from him would save Warriors ownership about 12-ish million on their insane $180 million tax bill. But Joe Lacob and company have been very willing to pay that tax bill during the Steph Curry era, so even that move I would say is relatively unlikely. All right, let's get back into things here with the Northwest Division, starting with the hopeful contenders, the Utah Jazz. So it's no secret that Utah needs some considerable help with their perimeter defense. As it turns out, Royce O'Neal on his own is not enough to prevent teams from just totally eviscerating the Jazz at the point of attack. If I'm Utah, I'm making some serious calls to Troy Weaver in Detroit about Jeremy Grant. Joe Ingles and Jordan Clarkson matches salary, and they would definitely have to include their 2028 first-round pick along with multiple seconds, I would imagine. If I'm Detroit, though, I'm probably asking for that first-round pick and Bojan Bogdanovic instead. He's obviously the better player and would be much easier for Detroit to reroute to a third team for additional assets if they so choose. I'm guessing Utah probably wouldn't be willing to do that. They're pretty conservative, but I would strongly consider it in their shoes. I don't think Rudy Gobert alone can save this team against a 5-out offense like we saw with the Clippers last year. So they're really going to have to consider some of these tough decisions to beef up their perimeter defense. If that strikes out, I would definitely offer that same Clarkson, Ingles, and the 28 first for Harrison Barnes. I probably wouldn't give up Bogdanovic in that deal, though. Harrison Barnes, he's not exactly a stopper, but he's a quality secondary defensive option to have out there. He's not getting torched off the bounce by role players like some of these key Jazz men do quite often. The Jazz also have a $7.4 million trade exception, courtesy of Sam Presti and OKC with that Derek Favors salary dump last offseason. If ownership is willing to fork over a bit of extra tax dollars, some realistic players they could absorb into this trade exception include Justin Holiday, Dennis Schroeder, Garrett Temple, and Torrey Craig. Utah would likely throw in a second round pick in any of those deals as well. I'd be pushing pretty aggressively for Justin Holiday if I'm Utah. great spot-up shooter. He's about 38% from three on seven attempts this season, which is fantastic. He'll fit right in with Utah. He won't take touches away from Mike Conley or Donovan Mitchell on offense, and he's seriously one of the best in the NBA at just getting around screens on defense out on the perimeter. Utah desperately needs that kind of player right now. So of that group of four I mentioned, I would think Justin Holiday would have to be at the top of Utah's list. Even paying two future seconds is probably worth it, and I would assume that would get the deal done there. I can't think of any team that would give up a first round pick for Holiday. So yeah, if Utah doesn't really love the Jeremy Grant or Harrison Barnes asking prices, I would be knocking on Indiana's door, waving around two second round picks for Justin Holiday for sure. Next, I think we'll just get Denver out of the way. This will be another short one. They struck early this year, moving off of Bol Bol and PJ Dozier for Bryn Forbes in a three-team deal with Boston and San Antonio, and they're pretty much priced in now with Jokic, Murray, Porter Jr., Aaron Gordon, and Will Barton. Monte Morris is on a great contract for them right now, so he certainly wouldn't be moved here before the deadline. And Denver is pretty much right at that tax apron right now, which they could potentially cross into if some unlikely incentives come to pass on either Aaron Gordon or Will Barton's contracts. The Nuggets definitely don't want that to happen because they'll be an automatic luxury team for the foreseeable future here starting next season once Michael Porter Jr.'s max extension kicks in. Let's see here. Yeah, actually, Denver could pretty easily dangle a future second rounder as bait out there for a team to take on Facundo Campazzo's $3 million expiring salary. He's been really bad this year, one of the worst players in the league, I would say. He's too small to guard anyone, and teams don't even have to guard him on the other end either. He's shooting about 31% on mostly wide-open catch-and-shoot threes this year. Awesome passer. He makes some wild no-looks and behind-the-back dimes, but that's definitely not something Denver is lacking with Jokic out there for 36-38 minutes a game. So yeah, I would expect Denver to move Campazzo here before the deadline to get out of the luxury tax for sure. That's probably the only realistic move remaining for the Nuggets here. Oh boy. Let's dive into the utter draft capital amalgamation of Sam Presti and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Usually Presti loves to take on bad contracts, which come attached with draft assets, then eventually flipping those previously conceived bad contracts for more assets. He's recently pulled that off with Al Horford, Kelly Oubre, Dennis Schroeder, and Danny Green. I don't think anybody's going to be very interested in Derek Favors with $19 million guaranteed over the next two seasons, though. So that particular side of Sam Presti's tyranny should slow down here this year. However, and this is where I can feel Presti's mouth watering at this point, OKC currently has $24 million in cap space and would surely be willing to take on some bad expiring salary if they were to come with, oh, I don't know, a first round pick. It's not like they don't already have whatever, 18, 19 in the next 6 years. They've also got two trade exceptions worth $9.5 million and $12.8 million, courtesy of the George Hill and Trevor Ariza trades made last year. So who should Sam Presti hunt down next for the draft picks?
Hello, Clippers. We see that you could save yourself $40 million on your tax bill by getting off of Serge Ibaka's money. Look, I'm a nice guy here at OKC. I know you don't have any first-rounders to give, so I won't heckle you for that. Instead, how about we settle on two future second-round picks, including that beautiful Pistons second-rounder? Include those with Serge Ibaka and we'll happily take them off your books.
Yeah, I think the Clippers would probably be happy to do that. Seems very mutually beneficial to me. I'm sure the Clippers don't want to have to spend an additional $40 million on an aging and increasingly disappointing Serge Ibaka if they don't have to. I would also give the Washington Wizards a call. They're obviously not too pleased right now to have Davis Bertans on the books for $16 million for each of the next three seasons. I'm sure OKC would be willing to shoulder that burden if it came with a future first-round pick as well, which Washington does have available. OKC would just absorb Bertans' salary into cap space as it does exceed their current trade exceptions, while Ibaka would fit nicely into that $12.8 million exception generated from the Trevor Ariza trade. I actually like the Bertans fit in OKC right now. They're pretty desperate for some more spacing out there, even though they're not trying to win. Obviously, God forbid the Thunder try to win some games. But I do think he would be a world of good alongside Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Josh Giddey, especially. Just open up the floor a little bit because they're so clogged in there trying to make plays off the dribble. And there's probably a million other different permutations of smaller deals OKC could pull off for different second rounders and whatever other picks they want. But those are the main ones I would look into. I would call up the Clippers about Serge Ibaka, and I would call up the Wizards about Davis Bertans. Steal all the draft picks. Next up on our hit list, we've got the Portland Trailblazers, who by all accounts expect to be incredibly active at the deadline here, but for retooling purposes rather than rebuilding. I don't get the notion that they're trying to rebuild with young players or draft assets. No, I think the Blazers are still trying to build a contender around Damian Lillard. That's what all the reporting has indicated up to this point. And from what we know now, Yusuf Nurkic, Robert Covington, Larry Nance Jr., and Norman Powell have been made very available. Nurkic and Covington both make about 12 to 13 million and are on expiring contracts, so they should be super easy to move. Some names that Portland has been linked to include Jeremy Grant and Miles Turner as of late, both of which would likely require 22-year-old Nasir Little, a future first-round pick with the appropriate salary filler. In this case, that would probably be Robert Covington. The Blazers don't technically have a first-round pick they can trade at the moment. They're all lottery-protected basically for the next 5 to 6 years, but it would presumably open up much sooner than that, as soon as next season, after their one season write-off. They could technically agree to another next available pick type of wording that we mentioned before. That's typically how teams like this can work around the Stepien rule, which prevent teams from trading first round picks in multiple seasons. For the Blazers, I would only work in those conditional terms if the return is somebody like Miles Turner. If Nasir Little, Covington, and a first round pick does the trick, then Portland should probably take that. Both Lillard and Turner would likely have the remainder of the offseason to heal up. Dame's had that abdominal surgery now, and Turner is out for the foreseeable future with that stress reaction in his foot that Indiana is really hoping doesn't turn into a full-blown stress fracture. So if a deal like that were to happen, you've probably got to look at, well, you definitely have to move Yusuf Nurkic, and you could also look at moving Norman Powell for a true wing, since you just offloaded Nasir Little and Robert Covington. Maybe they could call up the Clippers about Marcus Morris. That seems like something that could be mutually beneficial. Marcus Morris and Yusuf Nurkic actually match salaries, and as I mentioned before, Nurkic is on an expiring contract, so that frees up some tax dollars for LA, while Portland definitely upgrades in that Robert Covington spot, I would say. I think Morris is significantly better than Covington at this point in time. I don't know. Maybe Portland doesn't really want Morris's long-term money, but that seems like a pretty reasonable deal to make at this point, especially if they're able to land Miles Turner in a deal like that. I would also be making calls to Indiana about Justin Holiday if I'm Portland. Matching salary there is a little bit tough, but Tony Snell, Ben McLemore, and Cody Zeller does the trick. Indiana would likely just end up waiving at least two of those guys, I would imagine. McLemore and Zeller are expiring minimum contracts, and Tony Snell only has $700,000 guaranteed for next season, so it would be really, really easy for Indiana to just waive them. Portland would certainly need to pitch in at least one second rounder to get that deal done. Again, I think the rate for Justin Holiday is going to be 2 seconds. I don't think he's quite good enough to really garner a first round pick in exchange, so I think a couple second rounders will probably get it done. That still leaves us with the CJ McCollum and Norman Powell on the roster together still. I think one of them obviously has to be moved before start of next season. You could still take them into the offseason, but I really do think you have to find a trade for either McCollum or Powell before the start of next season. This three-guard lineup stuff just doesn't work. They can't stop anybody on defense. The offense looks great, but they're consistently a bottom five defensive team right now. The only guys really available for trade at McCollum's $30 million price point are Ben Simmons and Tobias Harris. The 76ers aren't interested in a Simmons-McCollum swap. They've said that multiple times now. And Portland, rightfully so, is not interested in a McCollum for Harris swap. So there's not really much here to do with CJ, for now anyway. Norman Powell here is pretty tough too. Any chance Denver would be interested in a straight-up Norman Powell for Will Barton swap? I don't know. Portland gets a little bigger on the perimeter while Denver gets a little bit of a cleaner fit with Powell shooting at the two. That's about the only non-3-4 team deal I can come up with for Powell, working under the constraints of already dealing Covington and Nurkic. Maybe New Orleans would have interest in Larry Nance Jr. as a multi-positional defender next to Zion and a semi-stretch five at times. That's pushing it, though. Garrett Temple would kind of fill that backup wing void left by McLemore and Snell. Then obviously you would have New Orleans throw in Willie Hernangómez for salary matching. Probably get them to add a couple second-rounders in there too, I would think. Larry Nance, obviously way superior to Temple and Hernangómez. Again, this is all off the working from the original Miles Turner deal, so I'm pretty far into this rabbit hole now. Yeah, I should probably get to moving on here. We really just went through a Willie Hernangómez salary filler trade. Yeah, I think we're getting close to moving on here. Yeah, let's move on after creating an entirely new roster for Portland. Actually, no. Let's revisit everything. Let's revisit those trades that we just supposedly made, because that got a little weird toward the end. So, first trade, Nasir Little, Robert Covington, and a future first-round pick for a currently injured Miles Turner. Yusuf Nurkic straight up for Marcus Morris, Ben McLemore, Tony Snell, Cody Zeller, and at least one second round pick for Justin Holiday, probably two second rounders so, and Larry Nance for Garrett Temple, Willie Hernangómez, and a couple second rounders to kind of refill that asset bank. And if we're absolutely crazy and just going for it, you could do that Norman Powell for Will Barton swap. That would leave Portland with a starting crew of Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, Will Barton, Marcus Morris, and Miles Turner, with Anfernee Simons, Justin Holiday, Garrett Temple, and Willie Hernangómez off the bench. Backup center is an easy fix in free agency, and like I suggested with the Clippers, you'll probably want to use the taxpayer mid-level exception on somebody like Otto Porter, Markieff Morris, or Trevor Ariza to get another backup wing in there. So there you go, Blazers fans. I absolutely gutted your entire team by accident. That was fun. I'm going to move on now. Let's check out the Minnesota Timberwolves now. They have made Malik Beasley very available ahead of the trade deadline and would like to add a starting caliber wing to play alongside D'Angelo Russell, Anthony Edwards, and Karl-Anthony Towns. Right away, I'd be calling the Clippers about Marcus Morris as well. They would probably not be interested in Beasley's $29 million guaranteed over the next two seasons, especially with Luke Kennard basically already filling that niche. However, if you offered up Taurean Prince's expiring $13 million salary to match Morris and threw in a first-round pick, I'm sure the Clippers would be very receptive to that to get a first-round pick for Morris. Minnesota owns all of their future firsts at the moment, so yeah, I think Marcus Morris would be a great target for the Timberwolves, especially since they're trying to be competitive right now. I think that's actually a better deal for the Clippers too, Taurean Prince in a first, as opposed to just the straight Marcus Morris for Nurkic swap earlier. Could be a good one to have for the Timberwolves, who knows. Robert Covington would also make a lot of sense for the Timberwolves right now, but the same issue arises here with Malik Beasley. Portland is not going to want to take on Beasley's contract with CJ McCollum and Norman Powell, both kind of at that shooting guard small forward spot. Maybe the Denver Nuggets are interested in a Malik Beasley reunion. Does Malik Beasley and a first rounder for Will Barton do anything for either side? Maybe Denver isn't interested in bringing back Beasley and his off-court antics. Barton probably isn't a big enough wing, at least not a big enough wing that Minnesota would be looking for, so maybe that doesn't work as well either. All right, last up, let's go for another home swing here for Minnesota. As I said, the Timberwolves own all of their first-round picks right now. They could offer up Malik Beasley, one of their end-of-rotation guys, like Jake Lehman, I think, and two future first-round picks for Jeremy Grant. I am very interested in that. If I'm Detroit, getting two first round picks for Grant, that's obviously the starting package of what they're looking for. And they could always bring in a third team for Malik Beasley if they wanted to reroute him elsewhere. So far, I think that's actually the best offer that I've kind of come up with here early on for Jeremy Grant. Minnesota would really have to decide if they want to give up two firsts for Grant and then extend him to that four-year, $100 million contract he's looking for. Tough for me to know if the Wolves love that prospect, but it would be one hell of an offer. All right, that's going to do it here. Next episode is going to feature the Southwest and Southeast divisions, so that'll be part two, which leaves the Central and Atlantic divisions for part three. I'm going to do my absolute best to have all of these up before February, where I kind of suspect trade season will heat up. Expect all three parts out within the next week, basically. And I'll talk to y'all soon. Until then.